Representative Van Freeman and Senator Willis are here. Mr. Willis, will you identify yourself, and if you sit on the hand, I think you'll come through.
Okay, my name's Ernie Muller. I'm the Commissioner of Environmental Conservation. And with me today is John Scribner, the Director of our Water Programs Division, Randy Bayless, the Supervisor of our Prince William Sound Region, and John Tillinghast from the Department of Water. Mr. Tillinghast represents us in many of the cases that we have and has worked with us very closely in developing this particular regulation. Perhaps I should explain what kind of problem it is that we're attempting to address through this particular regulation. Every year, the state, the federal government, and local municipalities in Alaska spend between $20 and $35 million to build, of public money, to build sewerage facilities and sewage treatment plants. In our opinion, much of that money would not be spent if land subdivisions had been properly designed. What happens is essentially that many at the present time, and we can give you some very graphic examples, some of which you may be personally familiar with, without any controls over the way land is subdivided in terms of design of sewage treatment systems, particularly soil absorption systems, an individual lot buyer can go out and buy a lot, construct a soil absorption system or some other sewage disposal system that may not be appropriate to that particular situation, that particular soil type or that lot size or lot configuration. And then, several years on down the pipe, when the system fails or contaminates the groundwater, he and his neighbors end up having a contaminated well, or the sewage flows out on the ground, he or the people in that subdivision approach the state and the municipality to construct a sewage treatment system. Now, that is exactly the situation that has happened in the Alyeska Girdwood system near Anchorage, where the land was subdivided, the kinds of systems they put in there were inappropriate, and the state and the municipality of Anchorage and the federal government will spend in the next couple of years probably about $5 to $7 million to go in and build a sewage treatment system and a collection system, a disposal system. Whereas if, for example, that problem had been identified early, at the most, we could have gone in and designed a system and bought a system at the time the land was, or put in a community sewage disposal system, the time the land was subdivided, and probably could have been done for maybe half the price of the current today's markets. Plus the fact that the guy that has bought the land and built the house has had to buy or build an initial system that wasn't any good to begin with, and then has to buy into a second system that will do his job. So he's the guy who's really bought the land, in addition to the general public, have been stuck with this, a real serious problem. This has been going on in Alaska for years. In the late 40s, they subdivided some land in Fairbanks. In fact, I can remember when I was living there in the early 50s, we used to go out into this area called Lamita, and there was a sign there that said, Lamita, good water. Well, the water in Lamita wasn't good for very long because people put in inadequate soil absorption, inadequate waste disposal systems, and pretty soon they found that they were recycling the water, going into the ground and up their neighbor's well. It was a joke that went around at the time that if you waited to Tuesday to do your laundry, you didn't have to add any soap to the water because when you turned on the tap, soap came out from down the street. That's the kind of problem we're attempting to solve with this kind of regulation. It simply says, tell us what your plans are for waste disposal for a subdivision before the land is sold. And that's that particular problem. Now, the reason that John Scribner and John Tillinghast and Mr. Bayless are here is to speak from their experience. The kinds of problems we're trying to solve, the kinds of different approaches, and how we've attempted to meet the objections of the public to these regulations over the last year and a half that they've been in development.
Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Commissioner, most of these regulations, problems that you're trying to solve, they occur within or without the boundaries of an organized municipality? Are these?
Both. And of course, it depends on what kind of a situation you've got. In the case of a recent problem we had at Fairbanks with a subdivision up there where the water table is so close to the surface of the ground that you can't really put a soil absorption system in, so they put in the local people got together and built a system, and then they ran the effluent out on the ground. Well, it ended up running over into the university's property, and they started complaining to us. Well, in that case, the borough will form a service area. Even though they don't have area-wide waste treatment powers, they will form a service area in that area to solve that problem, and then they can go to us and get federal and state money to build an interceptor after that particular, to solve that particular problem.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be logical, though, for these problems to be handled at the local level rather than the state getting into the act?
Yeah, I agree. And we have specifically provided in regulation for if the local government wishes to do this as part of their service, and they do it and the state gets out of the business. Anchorage, for example, currently, is, to our knowledge, the only municipality that presently does this particular thing.
Yeah, but then so what you're saying is that if the municipality wants to do it your way, that's okay, but you want it done your way nonetheless. Is that right?
Well, in some cases, not necessarily that rigorously. Anchorage, for example, has many more requirements than we would have. Whatever way they do, as long as it fulfills some minimal requirements that we have put down into the regulation.
You see, my problem is, and of course this is a ongoing thing as far as I personally am concerned, and that is the object of the state trying to dictate to the local governments what they should and shouldn't do is, you know, for their own good. And it seems to me that that the local people have as much, if not a lot more, interest in their own welfare and well-being than the state would have. And it seems to me that any time, let me put it another way, if a local municipality, the government of a local municipality wants to float in their own sewage, why should you get into the act?
Well, because that's the law sets us up as the state agency that handles this particular problem. Title 46.
State law?
Right, state law. And generally we would like to see that set up so that the local government on a problem like this, which is essentially fairly simple to solve, if the local government wants to expend the money and spend the resources managing it like Anchorage is doing, that's fine. Other local governments feel, I guess, that their priorities are different and they just as soon have the state do it. There was a ordinance proposed to the Matsu Borough for them to take over this thing and put on some more rigorous requirements than the state did. And the people said at the hearing of the ordinance said, we want the state to do it. You know, you guys have other kinds of things to do. So it works both ways.
That isn't the gist of from the gist of their testimony and objections to regulation. That isn't the way I read it, but maybe I'm missing something.
You can tell us one thing.
I made it to Senator Poland and Senator Summers. Senator Poland, any questions this time?
Mr. Chairman, in the process of how does the state actually get into the act, so to speak? When do you come into the act with regard to, say, the Kenai? You know, when they file a subdivider goes to the borough and petitions or whatever they do to get a subdivision going, and then at what point are you required then to check this subdivision plan?
Well, that was one of the kinds of problems that we found in looking at the law that doesn't set a time certain at which the state could take some action. And so we worked very carefully and got a lot of public comment on that particular thing. Maybe I should ask John to explain exactly what we came up with.
Let's move right up.
Oh, okay.
And identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Tillinghast. I'm with the State Department of Law. As originally proposed, the regulations, when they first came out in draft, the regulations required that the subdivider seek and obtain plan approval for his sewage treatment prior to filing his plat with the local platting authority. We got significant objection from that, from several local governments who said you should conduct your process independently of the way that we conduct ours. And so we changed it to require more or less simultaneous filing with the borough and and the state. And the value of this arrangement, which met with the approval of most of the local governments here in the state, as did the regulations themselves, was that that enables the borough staff and the state staff to work simultaneously with the subdivider to come up with a sewage disposal and water treatment arrangement that can meet the problem from the outset. If I could, if I could step back just for a second with the chairman's permission, current state law requires that to install and construct a sewage treatment facility, it requires state plan approval on an individual construction basis. It also requires that the provision can be waived, and it's been the state policy that wherever we can waive this for individuals, we do. Because first of all, we don't like the idea of individuals having to deal with the state for on-lot water and sewage treatment systems on their own property. It's an administrative burden, and it's a financial burden on the individual. The problems come up when an individual buys a lot of small lot size, high water table, where it a typical on-lot water and sewer system can't be placed. And when the problems, of course, arise at the time the subdivision is created. That determines your lot size, and of course your lot size is a factor of how high the water table is, how close you are to a river, and so forth and so on. If we can't identify the problem at the subdivision stage, then the state has absolutely no choice but to apply its laws for the first time on the individual, the little guy, so to speak, who can is in a far worse position to deal with the problem at that time. He may have made his life's biggest investment. I think, as Mr. Bayless will point out, often once the subdivider has left the scene and has run back off to from whence he came, the little guy is stuck with a lot that is just too small and the water table is too high to put an on-lot water and sewer system on. As a result, one of two things happen. He loses his life's biggest investment, or he's forced to buy one or two more lots, or help fund an expensive community system. That's an ineffectual way of doing it. It's an unfair way of doing it. And since the problems that the little guy is now burdened with were caused by the subdivider when he created lots too small, both as a matter of equity and as a matter of convenience and efficiency, we would far prefer to deal with these problems when they're created rather than at the last moment with the fellow that's bought the individual lot.
How about your staff? Do you have adequate staff to follow up on the...
I think that Mr. Scribner or Ernie would be better prepared to respond to that.
Right. With the kind of situation we're running into now, if we utilize the subdivision plan review approach, then staff is not a problem. Essentially, the costs are partly externalized. You know, the state merely says, gee, that's fine. Go on about your business. If we get into a situation where individual lot buyers have to go out and extract this information for their individual property prior to construction. They have to come to us with plans and have those plans approved. Then we're talking about an enormous amount of staff time and an enormous burden to the individual lot buyer, a burden that is really unnecessary if the subdivider provides that information to begin with.
Let me make another observation, because I think it was brought up concerning shouldn't local governments be doing this, and I agree that they should, and that's why we put the waiver in. But the borough, the area that's most concerned with these regulations, the Kenai Peninsula Borough, to the best of my knowledge, still explicitly refuses to review a subdivision plat for adequacy of water and sewage. They put a disclaimer on plat approvals that say that we have not reviewed this for adequacy of on-lot water and sewage. That's the responsibility of the State Department of Environmental Conservation.
I don't know if they still do that, but they did that for a number of years.
John told me that
they still do that, John?
I'm not sure if they still do that.
still.
It's almost more than we did.
Yeah.
We have ripped down roads from.
Who knows? Does anybody know where they were or not?
They were. I think what they're doing, is, at least for the interim, they're trying to develop their own regulations on this. And they've gone back to the drawing boards on those new regulations. We've not yet had an opportunity to see what they've come up with. They want to get involved in it, but to this date they have not. And at least prior to the effective date of these regulations, they were putting a disclaimer on there.
I may add that I believe in their testimony, they said they had sent in last October a copy of their proposed resolutions, ordinances rather, and had received no answer from the department.
I'll try to respond to that. The lack of response, my name is John Scribner, and I'm the director.
Why don't you get up closer so we can get this.
The lack of response to their last correspondence with us was due to internal administrative problems. We lost the one fellow that was working on these regulations, and so that left myself and the deputy commissioners, the only ones that were involved in the technical aspects of these regulations and the finalizing of them. The deputy commissioner and myself, he passed a letter to me for a response, and I just didn't get around to putting together a response to it. And it's as simple as that. It's not trying to avoid them and what they're trying to do. If we offered the help of our regional engineer, Kyle Cherry, and he was available anytime, I just didn't get the response prepared to it.
I think that's kind of a serious step there, because here they're waiting for review, which you said, and then they didn't receive no answer at all.
I have talked to them about this on the phone since then, and they told me that they did not want a response on that set of regulations at this time. They said they have since gone back to the drawing boards, that they are undertaking a whole new approach to it, and that when they get that set of regulations drafted, that they'll send it to us for review.
Yes, but in the meantime, and this come up, when this would have reviewed their original request last October, I think it would have had a bearing on this also. And then they had started their new ordinance to compile it.
I believe
that they had sent, if I remember correctly, it is, I have it recorded, that they had sent in what they were doing, and this they received nothing, no remarks on that either. Now this might be the one that was in October.
I'm not sure that it would have made any difference. Because whether or not they develop an ordinance is really kind of independent of what we might do. We didn't meet with them. Our staff in Kena, or Soldatna, met with them and tried to explain what we were trying to do. And while we apologize for not responding to their initial letter, I really wonder whether the issue was not separate.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question this morning?
Yeah.
Just to get this straight in my own mind. The reason for them sending their regulations or their proposed ordinance for your review is to see whether or not it meets your specifications or does what's required. Is that what you're saying? Why would they have to submit their ordinance to a state?
They didn't have to.
Why did they?
It's a matter of courtesy, I think.
It was just a matter of courtesy that they knew that we were developing regulations that would enable local governments, if they wanted, to enter into this program. And they were, out of courtesy, sending us a copy of their very rough draft of proposed regulations. And they were so rough that they have completely abandoned that approach and gone to a completely different approach.
But what I'm getting at is, though, their ordinance has to comply with your regulation?
There are certain criteria spelled out in the regulation that says these are the requirements on which your application will be judged.
I'm missing something here. In other words,
I don't know if judge is the right term.
All right, but the state, in other words, Their ordinances they're subordinate to and have to comply with the state regulations whether or no they like it. Is that what you're saying? In other words, the regulations that you make control and their ordinances have to comply?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
No. These regulations have absolutely no effect on the ability of local governments to pass and enforce any ordinances they want. The waiver provision says that if the state's interest in clean water and healthful sewage disposal is met by local ordinances, that the state will get out altogether from the jurisdiction of that municipality. The municipality can have all its own ordinances at once, and the state has no business and no authority reviewing them. All we're saying is that if in addition to enforcing your own ordinances, you'd say to the municipality, in addition to enforcing your own ordinances, if you want the state out of your jurisdiction entirely on this issue, then if your ordinances are as stringent as ours, then our interests are protected, so why should we be in there meddling?
That's what I was trying to get you to say. You said the state lays down the guidelines, and if they come up to meet those, then you'll get out. Otherwise,
then we get out.
Right. But otherwise, if they don't come up to that, you stay in. In other words, the state regulations are dictating to the municipal governments as to what their regulations and ordinances should be as far as wastewater disposal is concerned.
I think it all goes back to the law, though.
I know, and that's what I'm getting at. And maybe what we have here is a problem where the law should be changed. Of course, again, as I said before, this is a personal thing with me. I don't think you have any business, and I don't think the legislature had any business in the first place to set the state agency up where it goes to the municipality and dictate to them how they should handle their own problems, and that's a philosophical difference. But I just wanted to be sure that I understood what you're saying.
Well, you run into an equal protection problem where a local government could set itself up to establish laws that are weaker than they are in, say, the unorganized borough, purposely so. Or to set up in competition. We're going to have weaker laws than they are in the state in general. And I think that would be a serious problem for them. I think the legislature should consider that before making any determination.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
But that's the struggle we have with the federal government, too.
That's why the federal government is in the business.
Well, and that's why I'm going to do every damn thing I can do to get them out of our business. In all the areas that I can. Let me just run through a series of things here. What, other than the law, prompted the regulations?
Okay, kind of problem.
Any incident?
You came in a little bit late. Mm-hmm. Kind of problem I described when I started the discussion. In terms of...
Rather than ask you to do it all over again, was there a particular incident?
There are a number of incidents, and I think we probably should go into those in detail. Randy might describe to you the problem we had in Valdez several years ago.
At one point in the summary that I see here, they talk about that maybe the point at which the regulations should be most important is at the time of construction rather than at the time of subdividing or at the time of buying the land. What do you say to that?
That's the problem we talked about earlier, John mentioned. The fact that if the burden is put on the buyer of the lot, he may find when he goes to build, but he cannot build because of the fact that he cannot build a sewage system on that property. Mm-hmm. So then the only recourse he has is to lose his investment or to maybe go out and buy adjoining lots at inflated prices because the guys that own the adjoining lots know that they've got it.
Okay, I suppose then it just comes up to which viewpoint you want to take, whether you think the state has the obligation or the right to protect somebody in the purchase of a piece of ground, or whether you want to let him make that decision for himself, I suppose. And I'm not so sure that maybe an approach wouldn't be that the state says that where there's disposal and water all on the same property, that the purity of the water should be... certain percentage and not get into the business of trying, or there should be a, you should establish the purity of the water or the level of purity of the water. And I don't know that you should, that the state should really attempt to define the plans or the approaches or, quote, an approved technique, since there might be a lot of ways of solving the problem.
That's why we leave it fairly flexible.
Well,
they come and
you say fairly flexible, when you run it down, you say this has to meet your minimum regulations, or there is no flexibility.
I mean, the individual lot, the subdivider can have some flexibility in how he approaches the need for what waste disposal and water supply.
I think that, again, if you set the the result standards, you know, the purity of water and so forth, you are placing the burden and the risk of substantial loss on the individual lot buyer when the problems which led to the impure water were caused by the creation of the subdivision by having two small lots or lots in the wrong configuration or something. And just as a matter of economic ability, as a matter of equity, as a matter of administrative ease and enforcement, if you're going to get the result of pure water, you should be able to address you should be able to address the situation at the time of the problem is created, which is with the subdivision.
Right. And what happens there is that essentially we're waiting till a problem, till a serious problem occurs, before anything can happen. And the remedial action that takes place at that point is to put in a community sewer system, and that costs an enormous amount of money, especially after the guy has already built another system that has failed. Then you have to go in and dig up the streets and dig up his property and give him an assessment which may exceed the cost that he spent on the lot to begin with. And the state goes in there and spends an enormous amount of money, and the municipality and the federal government. And it's getting to the point now where we've got, I talked to the university a couple of years ago, where their sewer assessment for one lot in Fairbanks exceeded $25,000. Now, I don't know what the heck they're going to do with it. They're trying to sell the lot, but who's going to buy it?
But this is really as it states here, that it really is a consumer protection bill rather than land conservation.
It's both.
I'm going to add something also. Now, you keep referring to small lots, mm-hmm. city-sized lots. Now, you're talking about before a city is established, are these lots. Now, in the Kenai, for example, their lots, we speak of them, are 5 acres minimum that they're having many months of trouble on. Yes, this is one of the Mr. Anderson has on it. And that already you're talking about the University of Alaska. Well, they have establishment there. They do have sewers.
Oh, yeah. They own property around the state.
And I'm when you talk of this, and for example, on the review plan, no person may construct, alter, or modify a sewage system or treatment works or any part of one until detailed engineering reports, plans, and specifications are submitted to the department and the approval of the department in writing. The department will, in its discretion, waiver this requirement for sewage treatment disposal on the individual residential or recreational lots. And also it puts it professional engineer must be doing this. And how many areas do they have a professional engineer to go out and make these tests and approve?
Can you explain how that?
The engineer requirement is for the large subdivision. It's not for the individual lot.
Doesn't say that in the hearing.
This is on for the subdivision plan review. Engineered plans are required for engineered soils tests. On this plan review, the department, in its discretion, the department has chosen that for basically for a fourplex and above is where you figure that you're getting into the complexity necessary for an engineer to become involved in it. So that an engineered plans are not required for the individual lots. In most cases, unless you've got a highly unusual situation like a surface discharge to a stream.
Where does that say that in 65?
It says 060.
And that's in 060.
Yeah, I know that.
In 065, it does not say that. To the best of my knowledge, it doesn't.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add something on that the regulation you're just reading from with regards to individual lot approvals has been in effect pretty much since the department was formed. There were some minor changes in other sections, which is why it's in there. That's precisely the regulation that we don't want to apply to the individual. We want
that's
to apply
by the waiver section.
We want to apply it to the subdivider. But if these regulations are overturned and we are precluded from addressing the problem at the subdivision stage with the subdivider, then in problem subdivisions, we're going to have to go back to the individual. And that's not what we want to do. We don't think the burden should be on a little guy. We think it should be on the commercial subdivider.
Well, here in 65 says representative soil testing, logs, boring, prepared by a professional engineer registered
yes.
in the state of Alaska.
That's true.
So yes. I thought you just mentioned it.
No, not for the overall plan. That's for one specific part. That's just for the soil tests. And we feel that for the subdivisions that are covered by this act, that's an engineer that's qualified in saying whether or not the soils are adequate should be the judge of that.
How many of those are in the state and available?
Engineers?
Yeah, well, professional engineers that would be able to take on this.
Hundreds of them.
Well, in the Kenai area, they say they have this would cause a problem.
There, I could respond a little bit to that. One of the, there is no one down there right today that will, no, there are. There are offices in Kenai, in the Kenai area, that will, on request, come down there or are available to go out and do those soil tests. There will be more business down there if it...
That's her card. Maybe there's nothing on it.
That specifically did that job.
Well, in your notes also, didn't you also say that they don't have to be on each individual lot?
Yes.
That's right.
Well,
then what is the purpose? They can go out and stick them wherever they want, and then define it down closer. If you have a 48-acre subdivision you're going to make, how many test holes are you going to have to make?
Okay, I can't tell you exactly, but if it's in an area that the soils are known, the engineer certifies that the soils in this area are all pretty much the same in that 40-acre subdivision, then maybe three or four sites would be adequate. And that is normally what is required, three or four representative soil tests per subdivision. On the other hand, if the subdivision covers many different types of ground conditions, there's clay over in this part, there's sand over in this part, and gravel over there, and
permafrost over here.
Permafrost here. Then he should take a soil test on each of those representative sites, and it might be a dozen. It's hard to say, but if the soil is homogeneous for a large subdivision, 40 acres, something on that order, three or four soil tests should be more than adequate. And we've applied that. I don't think anybody has had a problem with the way we have administered that in the past, because we have done this for years and years down in the Kenai.
Well, you explain to them the plaque system that the Kenai Borough had, the way they explained it to us. Remember how they approved of their plaques before this came into.
Well, I don't know that I understand it precisely, but apparently at some point after the local authority approves it, apparently the state also has to approve this portion of it before they can be filed. And apparently they run into some problems in as much as they're handling a lot of these cases, and apparently they're getting bottlenecked, not getting this, the state approval timely, for the subject.
They were the ones that recommended when it be done.
That is this recent? Because there's the timing is pretty.
This is last week.
Yeah.
What they're saying is the way it is right now today, is that the problem, or the way it was before these regulations?
Well, I'd understood that they were still in this bottleneck, and
Kyle Cherry's office reviews the plans, and he makes it a policy. He gets those plans out within 3 days. That's his practice, is 3 days, and he doesn't go over that.
Well, that was
there
the way
isn't here,
I
there isn't
Mr.
here
Chairman,
a limitation that says we have to approve them within 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
But his practice has been 3 days.
Mr. Chairman, just one question. If someone submits you a set of plans and you approve the plans and they go back and the builder builds, what responsibility does he have? What responsibility do you have to him if he has a problem? Suppose there develops a problem on his lot that he's bought, whose plan has been approved by you, and he comes back to the state and says, hey, you guys owe me something. What do you owe him?
Let me answer that, if you don't mind. My name is Randy Bayless, and I'm with the Valdez office. We're the people that go out and deal with the public like that. What I thought I'd like to do, not only answer your question, which is appropriate, but I want to show you all what one of these things actually looks like. We're talking about this and that and the other thing. I don't believe everybody here understands exactly what these plans look like and what they do in the process. In addition, that's the question I got to answer when we approve. Here is one of these plans. It's for one of the subdivisions outside of Valdez. It's about 10 miles out. And a simple cover letter, a couple of engineering tests on the soils, in this case three, was sufficient. He showed us what the typical lot diagram looked like. He submitted an aerial photograph showing where them soil tests, where the holes were dug along the road. And then, last but not least, he submitted a plan for this subdivision. That's all of the requirements that were in our regulation then, and it hasn't changed since then. It is now more simple. Now, this shows the working diagram. This is when you sit down with a guy and you say, hey, look, here's where you're going to have your problems in the subdivision. and here's how you can make it better. So you sit down with this guy. In this particular instance, this gentleman was very easy to deal with because he knew what he was headed for. If he can come up with a good subdivision, that all the lots are good for everybody, then he's perfectly happy to make the maximum use of his land. So we're helping him in his development. That's what I think most people don't understand. Many developers, most of them, 9 out of 10, are eager to work with us. And that's not a lot of crap. That's the real thing. And this gentleman was very happy to work with us. I would point out one other thing. 9 out of 10 communities in this state are happy that we're involved in this too. If you look at the Matsu Borough or Anchorage and so forth, they're all pleased to have us talk to them. Now, in this particular subdivision, by the way, I'm real proud of this. Let me just pass this around. The gentleman was so keen to work with us and everything. Well, let me explain to you what was the problem here. We have a real high water table close to the floodplain. We couldn't approve a normal unlot water and sewer system. It wouldn't work. So he worked with the man. He advised every one of his lot owners, anybody that come to him, he'd say, look, we got to have a special deal because normally a septic tank and drain field wouldn't work. His engineer and I sat down, designed out something that would work for every landowner, or every property owner there. And he gives one of them, every time somebody buys a lot, he gives them a little picture of how to build one of these things, how to create it, how to make it work so that everybody's in great shape. So, now, if a guy comes to me from that subdivision that we've approved at the subdivision level, there's no problem. I just give him a little sketch. He says, where should I put my this and that and the other thing? He says, you've got a fine lot there. We've already looked at that lot. Here's where you put your well. Here's where you put your septic tank. When you get your well constructed, we'll come out and take a sample. And that's one subdivision.
Okay, and then you take the sample, and the sample fails.
Well,
that's the water.
The water sample. It's very, very, if you approve them at the subdivision level, you don't have that problem.
Wow.
Very rare. You prevent problems from happening that way.
I understand. I understand what your effort is, but I'm saying, suppose you take the sample and it fails, then what do you say to them?
Well, it just costs more. They have to put a chlorinator on the well if it runs contaminated. They might have to relocate the well. At least they're not drinking bad water. But 99 out of 100 times, you prevent that from ever happening in the first place. Now,
answer is that the state has no responsibility to them except to tell them your system has failed and then offer suggestions of how it might be corrected.
Well, they all
help them.
Yeah, we help them correct it.
After the, we might get sued and lose, I don't know.
Let me show you one other thing that happened to us with Valdez, and this is the example of the worst subdivision I know of in the state. Here is a subdivision that was laid out before Title VI was enacted, which gave us the authority to review subdivisions. Now this guy comes through here, he subdivides the river. He puts one part of a lot on one side of the river and the other part of a lot on the other side of the river. Now this river is one of the most sensitive salmon streams in Valdez, 6,000 red salmon, twice that many coho and twice that many pink salmon use that river. Yet people want now just, this guy here, for example, he couldn't hardly put his septic tank in there to fit. This guy here, well, the floodplain is on 200 feet on either side of that river. And anybody that builds there can't get any sort of federally sponsored insurance. The water table is so high. This septic tank here fails all the time, backs up at least twice a year. These people just insisted on going in there and doing
it. I'm going to have to interrupt for a minute, but there's one thing that we're going to meet again, and I'll meet with the committee this, for a different time, and let's have some other ones here to testify. And basically what you've been bringing up is subdivisions of small lots, and I think there should be a distinction between the small lots and the larger ones.
Yes, so these are all acre size and larger.
So that's
Mr. Chairman, just before we break up, wasn't there some discussion about 40,000 square feet lots and larger being exempted, and then the commissioner put in an emergency regulation and seemed to me like that was voted down. That was about or denied at the legislative level. Seemed to me like that was 4 years ago, wasn't it? And is that not the case now? Is that they're not exempt at this time? 40,000 feet and 1 acre lots.
What happened was that there was a 40,000 foot minimum lot size for on-lot water and sewer, period.
You get to sit down.
And that was turned down by legislature.
I introduced the resolution.
Okay. We will let you know again when we'll meet, because it's they haven't had anything to do, and so it's hard to get them together. I want to thank all your members for coming.
Pardon?
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.